This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's look back to a couple of days ago. Heston Kerstad will start against a lefty again against Garrett Crochet. He did not. Both of you guys fell back. Zach Eflin begins his season with a second straight win. He did not. Jason, you fell back. Ken, you bounced back.
I was trying to be positive.
Ryan Mountcastle and Ryan O'Hearn, they haven't homered yet. They still haven't homered. Mm-mm. Question was, one of those two would homer in the next 2 days. They did not.
Nope.
Ken, you bounced back.
Yeah, trying to be
Mounty
positive.
Mounty would hit it over the new wall.
Yeah.
Jason, you fell back.
That was Christian Campbell.
Yeah. Yes. Jason, you fell back. You said Mounty, no homers, but he has a double. He did double yesterday.
He did.
Don't sound so surprised, Bone.
I
speak the truth.
And then the question, you guys thought that I was crazy asking this. Gunnar Henderson will return to the lineup Thursday when he's initially eligible.
They got the damn plane there.
Both of you guys bounced back.
They gave him way too much credit.
They sent the plane to Norfolk and he was in Charlotte.
We don't know that that's accurate.
Yeah, that's what I think. Hyder said weather in Norfolk.
He didn't say that.
He said weather in Norfolk.
I don't think they were willing to spend money to send the plane anywhere.
Warriors cover the 4.5-point spread at the Grizzlies. They did. They won 134-125. Both of you guys bounced back. Nuggets cover the 3.5-point spread against the Timberwolves. They did not. T-Wolves won outright.
Okay.
I'm kidding, too.
I'm just making sure you weren't moving on to another game.
140-139. Both you guys fell back. Jason fell back and said Minnesota money line.
Take the Wolves on the money line.
Great, great final 30 seconds from Russell Westbrook in that game.
Well, what do you expect?
Missed a layup and then fouled the guy at the buzzer.
Anytime he doesn't trip over his own feet, I'm surprised. Yeah.
Bucks, 5.5-point favorite against the Suns. Jason, you fell back, but you did say go over in the game. The over did hit with ease.
Easy.
It did.
Hit with like 7 minutes left.
133-123. The over-under was 221.5. Ken, you bounced back.
Yes, I did.
This was a close one with Jason coming out on top 5-4. Let's get into this weekend.
So I got one wrong.
I have more than six. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So you get two wrong.
So I went 5-2. And that's how he couched it.
Well, the
tough critic. It's like Beltway Ben with Buzz.
Yes.
I just can't win. Yeah. I just can't. Even when I win, bounce back, fall back, I lose.
He's grading on quite the curve.
Oof.
Lineup already out. Was opening before them, but we deal with it. Gunnar Henderson leads off all weekend long. They face a lefty on Sunday. Jason.
No, I think Westy will lead off Sunday.
Oh, okay. Jason, fall back. Westy leads off on Sunday. Ken?
I think Hyder's stubborn. He's going to have him leading off all weekend. Gunner's their leadoff guy. Bounce back.
You mean the supercomputer?
Well, yes.
Gunnar Henderson homers this series. Ken?
I think I put it in a FanDuel read earlier.
Wow. And we listen to those religiously.
You should.
That's the part of the show we pay the most attention to.
That's what I expected. Yes, he will homer this weekend.
I'm not shouting nobody out.
What about Mattress Mack?
Tempur-Pedic Active Breeze is amazing.
How is it?
It's life-changing. It's great. Bounce back, fall back. You won't have to worry about falling back. You'll want to fall right back into that mattress and never get up.
Nice play on words there.
What about Chef Chill?
R.I.P.
That's right.
I'm gonna say two doubles this weekend, Bone, but not a homer.
That is a fallback for those at home. Dean Kramer,
Mean
Slim,
Dean.
And Sugano, all complete five innings. Just complete five innings. Jason.
Sugano goes 4 1/3.
Sugano, 4 1/3. So it's safe to say Slim and Dean go five?
I'll say barely, yeah.
Dean and Slim barely.
I might say 4 2/3 for Mean Dean tonight.
Okay. Final answer?
Final answer.
4 2/3. All right. 4-2 Mean Dean tonight. Slim barely over five. All right, Ken.
I'm falling back. They're not all three guys are going five innings.
Maybe some positivity out of Kenny Sunshine here. O's take 2 of 3 against the Royals. 2 of 3. Get back to 500. Come on, Kenny Sunshine.
I'll bounce back. Yeah, I have no logic to this, but I'll bounce back. Yeah.
Just looking at the pitching matchup Sunday here, Bone.
I think Slim's going Sunday.
Sunday is Slim against
Slim Bubich.
Bubich. Give you a Bubich.
Ricky Booby.
Bone, I think they get swept.
I think you give it.
O's get swept.
Yes.
I think they get an ointment for that.
O's get swept.
Yeah, Bone.
Let's go Final Four, which you can hear both games on 105.7 The Fan, by the way. Coverage gets underway tomorrow at 4, if you're interested. Jason, Florida covers the 2.5-point spread against Auburn. Auburn.
I'm going to say the Gators win.
Gators win.
75-73.
That's a fallback for those at home. That's two. Ken?
War Eagle, Bum.
Okay, fallback.
Yeah, that's no. Yeah, yeah. Because Auburn's winning outright.
I need Florida in my survivor pool.
Auburn wins. I need them the worst way as well. Duke covers the 4.5-point spread against Houston. Ken.
Houston wins outright, Bo.
Oh, we love the
fallback.
Dogs.
That would be problematic for me.
Houston wins outright.
They're a bunch of old men.
I'm assuming you're bouncing back after that response.
Duke, 69.
Wow. 69.
It's for Bum.
The Cougs.
And the Common Man.
The Cougs. Yes, 65. Shout out to T-Bone and the Common Man.
69. So that's a fallback. That's a fallback. Four points.
You're on it, Bone.
I am
for
on
it. Friday, you are sharp. Razor sharp. Nothing gets past the Bone on a Friday.
It's less than four and a half.
Yeah.
Couple NBA plays. Thunder. They cover the 6.5 at the Rockets tonight, Jason.
I'm on it -5.5. I would still get on it -6.5.
As a bounce back.
The Thunder have covered 11 straight games.
Jeez.
8 of those games they've covered by 7.5 points. Not won by 7.5 points. Covered by 7.5 points. They've won 7 of the last 10 games against the Rockets. They've won those games by 11, 15, 19, 17, 13, 37, and 32 points.
Wow.
Houston 3-7 last 10 ATS. Rockets are playing really good ball. Really good ball. But the Thunder, man, you challenge the Thunder, they step on your neck.
How am I going to argue with that? They will cover, yes.
If you want more of that, you can check me out as soon as this is over on CBS Sportsline.
He's got his Ethernet
over
cable.
On CBS Sports HQ. Yeah, I got the microphone and the... we'll have baseball, we'll have NBA, we'll have some college.
Lastly, Warriors cover the 1.5-point spread against the Nuggets, Ken.
Man, the back-to-back thing scares the hell out of me, but Steve Kerr says they're all playing tonight, so I'll say bounce back.
My real play here is I would lean to the over.
I'll put lean to the over. I'll put that in the notes.
I'll say the Warriors win that game.
Do they cover?
Do they cover? I mean, it could be a point.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Well, but he needs an eight. He needs to know.
Saying they win by one.
Win by one.
Okay.
Win by
Chef
one.
Making curry.
Yeah.
Last second three. Well, down by two.
Win by one.
I'm going to say right corner baseline.
Curry, last second three. You said right corner baseline?
Yep. Joker lunges at him, but doesn't get close enough to affect the shot.
Joker lunges at him.
Russ fouls.
But doesn't get close
Russ
enough.
Russ is literally chewing on his own shoe in the opposite baseline.
Russ is chewing on his own shoe?
Yeah.
On his own
hungry,
shoe
Bob.
On the other baseline. Okay. All right. Coming up next, we get to the Orioles, and we'll check out their lineup. Gunnar Henderson back. Where's he batting? We're going to tell you. And what's this thing look like? It is much different, so you're going to want to hear that. And also, look back at Charlie Morton through two starts. That is next here on The Fan.
I don't know. I think in Toronto, my four-seamer was playing up, and it was today, too. And I think it took me a little while to see that, you know, and to start being more aggressive in zone with the four-seamer. The fourth inning in Toronto, three hits real quick. You know, I'm bases loaded real quick. So I would say it was, I mean, if I had to, I would say it's pretty similar. It was a pretty similar outing in terms of high pitch count early. But really, like, I didn't feel too threatened by the traffic today. I didn't really feel like my back was against the wall, really. I didn't. Whereas in Toronto, I felt like they were keeping pressure on me.
Charlie Morton after the game yesterday, he's 0-2 with a 9.72 ERA, a 1.92 whip. Before we get to Charlie Morton, Orioles and Royals, remember Baltimore baseball tonight coming up at 6 with the Bone and Bordy in the Bone.
Bordy's
coming
up here. Yeah, Bordy's ready to go. He's shot out of a cannon.
Yeah. Oriole lineup, Gunnar Henderson leading off at shortstop. Adley Rutschman's the catcher batting second. Jordan Westberg batting third at third base. Cedric Mullins in center field batting fourth. Ryan O'Hearn's the DH batting fifth. Tyler O'Neill batting sixth in right field. Heston Kerstad, he's batting seventh in left field. Ryan Mountcastle, he's the first baseman batting eighth, and Jackson Holliday batting ninth at second base. Interesting lineup with Gunnar Henderson's return.
Yeah, Seti in the four hole, obviously interesting. Gunnar back is a big deal. They're trying to get as many left-handed bats as they can against Lugo, who they've had trouble with. A lot of people, leagues had trouble with Lugo since he's become a starter, and really, yeah. Even when he started to sort of transition out in San Diego. So, yeah, we'll see if they can scratch out some runs. It's been a feast or famine offense so far. Charlie Morton, listening to him there, and he's an easy guy to root for.
Yeah.
And I like Charlie Morton, and he's had a hell of a career. He sounds like Kyle Gibson to me. Like, it's very similar.
Well, he's here, too.
Sort of approach. Well, yeah. Eventually.
Yeah.
But, no, it hasn't been good. And I've been chronicling his curveball from the moment they signed him. I'm like, all right, well, if the curveball plays like it did in the National League last year and the league, you know, bats 200 off it and slugs 300 off it, and he has a premium putaway pitch, or really not even a putaway pitch because he's not here for strikeouts, but a premium ground ball pitch.
Yes.
Then, you know, maybe this has a chance of working, but you just wonder about a 41-year-old guy, and when it goes, does it go quickly? And the league is destroying his curveball so far. Just two outings, but they're batting .455 off it, and they're slugging .818.
But it's got nowhere to go but up.
Yeah. He's given up home runs off it. He's given up singles off of it. He's given up doubles off of it. People seem to be sitting on it. He's relying on the fastball, which his velo's been good, and the fastball, you know, he's got 6 strikeouts with the fastball, but that's not why he's here. And the more of that he does, the hitters will adjust. And his other 3 pitches besides the 4-seamer, they have to be the key for him. And right now, they're not. I mean, they're batting .556 off the sinker. They're batting .500 off the change. This is not good. He is their number 2 starter in any way you want to slice it. They didn't give him $14 million not to be an important part of this ball club. And he's given up 18 hard hit balls and 41 batters faced. Color me concerned.
I think it's very clear that he doesn't have a ton of confidence in the curveball right now, and in large part because it is getting hammered. And he mentioned it specifically after the Toronto game, but he threw more four-seamers than curveballs in both of his starts this year. And the curveball usage is down over 10%, 32% of pitches curveballs this year, 42.4% last year. So he's going to have to get that pitch right in order for him to be effective.
You listen to him and you can tell he's smart and he knows what the problem is. The issue is, at 41 years old, can he fix it? Like, if he was 35.
He's not here in the role of Jordan Lyles 3 years ago. He's the 3rd highest paid guy on their baseball team.
I get
it. He's their number 2 starter.
And the roster construction that the roster they put together, the way they've constructed this is bad. I'm more concerned about him I'm separating him from them. And like, can he fix what ails him at 41 years old? I don't know that he can. Now, I don't expect him to be giving up like guys batting 500 and slugging 800 a month from now. If they are, he might not be on this team. But I just wonder if it's in him at this point.
You get what you pay for. There's a reason he was around when he was around. There's a reason you got him for 1 year. There's a reason a lot of other teams said, you know what, for that kind of money, let me take a shot on Walker Buehler, who at least has, like, there's a whole bunch of different ways you could have gone.
Well, now, three guys are in the same pot, and they all got signed by three different teams, and that's Scherzer, Verlander, and him. All around 40, all got about the same money.
And I'm not saying any of them are the answer. The guy we talked the most about was Eovaldi.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I would have signed.
And he only got 3 years, and by all accounts, they weren't even in on that a little bit. But look, none of that matters. What matters is, at the very least, he needs to eat the kind of innings that Gibson and Lyles ate, and that's not even happening yet.
No.
And so, like, who's he up next against? Arizona? I mean, go look at who led the league in runs last year. Go look at what that lineup's doing. He's eventually going to face the Yankees. Like, and you could tell me it's early. Well, I'm telling you, it's just like Corbin Burns. It's only happened 30 times. So guess what? 1/15th of the Charlie Morton experience has already happened.
Yeah, but you expect it to get better. I don't know how much better. I expect it to be better. Did you really think he's going to have a 500 batting average against and an 800 slugging?
Do I really think he could have an ERA somewhere between 5 and 6? I absolutely do.
He could. I would hope it's between 4 and 5, though, and that's the other part that which is a little depressing is that's my expectation to have the ERA between 4 and 5
for a number two starter.
Yeah. Well, Grayson and Bradish will be back at some point. All's well. All's well. Orioles and
just watching baseball.
Orioles and Royals tonight at 7:40, but Baltimore baseball tonight with Bordy and the Bone coming up at 6 here on the Fan. But coming up next, we will preview those Kansas City Royals. Josh Vernier covers the Royals for the Fan in Kansas City, and he joins us next. The 3-4 Orioles start a 3-game series with the 2-4 Royals tonight. Remember, Baltimore baseball tonight at 6 with the Bone and Bordy. It's everybody's going to be listening. But let's preview this series now as we head out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. Josh Vernier is the Royals insider for 96.5, the Fan in Kansas City, and he joins us now. And Josh, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. Let's start here. What the heck's going on in the AL Central? Everybody's 2-4 except for Minnesota, who's 2-5.
Well, you know how it goes when everyone is so very confident that this division's going to be a dogfight, and after having three teams in the postseason a season ago, they're set to do it again. Of course, they're all going to get off to a slow start. But good news for Kansas City, really good news for all of these teams, where, you know, maybe a little too early to say this, but, you know, the hope that three teams would make it to October out of the American League Central may have been a dream. It might be division title or bust. So, time to lock in for a team like Kansas City.
Well, look, we've spent a lot of time here in the 6 months leading up to this season, or 4 months, whatever, talking about and bemoaning what the Orioles did or didn't do. The Royals obviously had more playoff success than the Orioles, but these teams have been sort of at similar points in their rebuild for a while. Did you think coming in the Royals did enough? I mean, the Jonathan India thing is interesting, but like, what did you think of their offseason?
Certainly could have done more. I know they wanted a middle of the lineup bat, and once they missed out on Anthony Santander, and with the benefit of hindsight, thankfully missed out on Jurickson Profar, They settled by boosting their bullpen and Carlos Estevez, giving him $22 million to be their closer, which, as we're now 6 games into the season, has paid dividends. The bullpen is better than it was a season ago. That was the Achilles heel of last year's Royals ball club. But as we all know, a bullpen's only as good as its rotation allows it to be. Royals starters for the first 6 are averaging 5 innings. This for a rotation that was number two in the American League last year in innings pitched. So that needs to get rectified because of their inability to bring in that middle of the lineup bat. They're very similar to the offense. Again, six games in, they're very similar to the offense that we saw last year, where if Salvi, Bobby, and Vinny Pasquantino aren't driving in the runs, well, those base runners are likely going to be stranded at the plate. Jonathan India has been terrific, but he's one of those guys that's going to be stranded on the bases if Vinny, Bobby, and Salvi, the 2-3-4 hitters on this team, if they're not delivering, boy, that rotation better be lights out. As last year, they had two of the top five finishers for the American League, Cy Young, and might need that again if they're going to walk away with this division.
Well, one of those top five finishers, Seth Lugo, he's on the bump for the Royals tonight, and boy, was he a godsend for them last year, having his best season in his age 34 season. What are you expecting for an encore from Lugo?
And more than 200 innings last season, an ERA of an even three, runner-up for the American League Cy Young Award. I have a tough time expecting that to be duplicated or improved upon, although, like I just mentioned, this team might need him and Cole Ragans and Michael Wacha to all turn in another career year, like really all three of them did. Wacha had a really good year back in 2015, but that's a decade ago. To think that those three are going to put up similar numbers in 25 than they did in 24 is, boy, you got to be a pretty big Royals fan to think that you're going to get 200 innings out of a 35-year-old Seth Lugo, that there is a next level of all-star greatness for Cole Ragans. But to answer your question as far as Lugo, the team has to have 180 innings out of him. He needs to be a guy that every fifth day is giving you five-plus. He needs to give you six innings and a chance to win every fifth day. That's my expectation for Lugo, for Cole Ragans, for Michael Wacha. That is until someone else in this lineup of Michael Massey and MJ Melendez, a Hunter Renfroe, someone in that five through nine, until they show me that there's somebody different than who they were over the past few campaigns, no, Seth Lugo needs to be an all-star consistently.
Talking with Josh Vernier, it's Inside Access here on The Fan. Josh, for us, we feel like Adley Rutschman and Bobby Witt will be forever be tied together. They were the first two picks of the 2019 draft, and as we sit here right now, Bobby Witt looks to be the far superior baseball player. I'm just curious, looking back, were you hoping the Orioles were going to take Witt so Rutschman would fall to you? Where was the mindset in Kansas City back at that draft?
Couldn't go wrong. Couldn't go wrong if you ended up with Adley Rutschman. Would not be upset if you ended up like you ultimately did with Bobby Witt Jr. You know, last year, and it really wasn't until maybe July or August, it was really the first time. Listen, you can't say that drafting Adley Rutschman is a mistake. I refuse to. But with the all-time shortstop season that we saw last year from Bobby, it was the first time you ever thought, wow, the Royals lucked out by not ending up with Adley Rutschman, because he won first, right? Rutschman had success at the big league level a lot earlier than Bobby. He was a consistent winner, a consistent producer a lot earlier than Bobby. And you know, for those first 2.5 years, you were thinking, no, the draft went the way it should have gone, a natural leader, in a catcher in Rutschman. Last August, September was the first time I know personally I ever thought, wow, you know, maybe Baltimore is kicking themselves. Now it's a new season. Rutschman's done it just as long. You know, he's been a very good player just as long as Bobby's been a very good player. So it's actually pretty neat that we're going to be able to compare these two this season and for, you know, at least the next decade.
But one kid was in high school, and the other one had played 3 years of college ball, and one kid signed through his entire prime, and the other one doesn't have a contract. So to me, if you add that in, it's a no-brainer. If you ask anybody, who would you rather have, Bobby Witt under these circumstances right now or Adley Rutschman? I don't think there's a GM in the game who wouldn't take Bobby Witt, right?
No, and if Shohei isn't pitching, I can make a case that Bobby Witt Jr. is the best player on the planet. When you have that type of speed to go along with the arm, he's not going to slump. You're not going to see an 0-for-20. He's too fast. He's going to beat out that infield grounder. Yeah, Bobby and Gunner really is the comparison now of who's the best shortstop, who's the best player on the planet.
Josh, let's end you with, you brought up earlier, we know that an Achilles heel of the Royals last year was their bullpen. They brought in Carlos Estevez. How much better do you think this bullpen's going to be this year?
A lot better. They had absolutely no power in that back end. Well, when Baltimore saw him early last season and Will Smith was their closer, yeah, they had nothing. When Baltimore saw him in October, they were a little bit better with Lucas Hursegg. Hursegg, the closer for that wild card series, is now the fireman. So you'll see him in the fifth, sixth, seventh, depending on how the game's going. Hunter Harvey was on the team last year in October, but was injured, really unable to contribute. He's been outstanding. Eight up, eight down so far for, or nine up, nine down for Hunter Harvey so far with a fastball in, you know, sitting 97, setting up Carlos Estevez, who's been very impressive. So they have some power arms, some strikeout arms at the back end, and that was something that they didn't have last year. And as you guys know, if you don't have that, then in today's baseball, boy, you're really, you're in a real tough spot if you don't have those strikeout arms to call on in the big moments.
Josh Vernier, he's the Kansas City Royals insider for 96.5 The Fan and KC. Josh, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yep. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, a lot of Terps talk. We're going to talk to ESPN's Jay Billis at 5 and Terp legend Len Elmore at 5:30. But coming up next, a little purple rain in the forecast. Should the Ravens use one of those 11 draft picks maybe a little earlier to take a quarterback, develop a quarterback? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.
Three, and that's Milroe all the way. Jalen Milroe will walk in. Touchdown, Alabama.
You know, Lamar Jackson is very dominant. It's been evident to how he's played this season. For someone that's inspired to go to the NFL, just seeing as he takes his game to the next level each and every year, him being the top of the league, him definitely being a top five quarterback in the NFL, that's inspiring for sure. You know, as a young quarterback, that's inspired to go to the NFL. So that definitely puts a smile to my face, and I definitely love watching Lamar. You know, secretly, I'm actually a Raven fan. I grew up a Raven fan, so I pull for the Ravens.
So you heard the Jalen Milroe highlight, and then you heard Jalen Milroe talking about his secret love for the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson. So, Jason, you have an outside-the-box thought here. They have 11 picks. They have a quarterback that they're trying to extend. They did sign Cooper Rush, but what about using an early pick to take a developmental quarterback?
Yeah, I think it's an absolute possibility. There are other teams, other front offices who you've got the obvious Alabama connection. You've got the Ravens leaning into players with different sort of skill sets at quarterback. You've got the possibility of getting this kid on the field in some other capacity as some sort of a weapon. You've got the inherent value in developing a quarterback and what you can flip it into. And this is a value-based team. You've got one of the best rosters in the NFL with 11 picks, and there's no way they're all going to make it. You can afford a few sort of reaches or vanity type sort of selections. I think having someone who's here for 4 years or more in that system around Lamar Jackson, who can do more than just, you know, try to cobble things together when he plays, but really improve, like maintain a semblance of our quarterback can play too. We don't have to completely change who we are to win games. If we lose Lamar for half a season, it's happened before. We don't have to claw our way to 4-4. Maybe we could go 6-2. I mean, this kid's been incredibly impressive through this process, and there are a lot of people who are looking at him saying, I bet a team takes him that doesn't on the surface look like they need him because they think they can polish him up and they think he can be really good for them and they can improve the accuracy a little bit. Not that the accuracy is terrible, and they might really be onto something. Like, there's people whispering Hurts comps for him. So if you can get a player like that and you have nine other selections around him, including a ton in the mid rounds where the real value of this draft will be, especially at their positions of need, like D-tackle. I just think it's something worth discussing. I'm sure it's something they're worth discussing. If all these other teams I'm talking to are falling in love with this kid, it's hard for me to think that Ozzy doesn't have a bead on an Alabama kid who you might be able to get lower in the draft, and he turns out to be the second best quarterback in this draft or something like that.
I think it's definitely a good idea. Do I think they'll do it? Probably not. If just going on history, because since 2008, when they drafted Joe Flacco, their first franchise quarterback, the quarterbacks that they drafted outside of Lamar have all been 6-round picks. Tyrod Taylor is still in the league. Keith Wenning, Trace McSorley, and then Devin Leary last year, all 6th-rounders. Where I think it makes sense, given their philosophy of how they just don't pay for backup quarterbacks. So why not take one in day 2, or at least the start of day 3, like a 4th rounder? That way you have that cost certainty for 4 years. You develop them, and then if need be, they can step in and win you a couple games.
Milroe specifically is going to go in the 2nd round. And to just shine some light on precedent, the Eagles took Jalen Hurts in the 2nd round when they still thought Carson Wentz was an MVP caliber quarterback.
Correct. So we're paying him top dollar.
Yeah. So that's happened. I sort of lean towards, hey, instead of going in the 6th round, maybe take a Dylan Gabriel at the beginning of day 3 if he's still sitting out there. If they took Jalen Milroe in the 2nd round, I'd be like, whoa, that's interesting. I just think their mindset is going to be, we want to get as many guys that can help us help Lamar Jackson win a Super Bowl this year. But I do love the thought.
I mean, they took Ajabo knowing he wasn't going to play a year.
Yeah, I know.
Still in the 2nd round at a time when they had needs, and you could argue maybe their roster then wasn't even as good as their roster now.
Yeah.
And even when he came back, is he ever going to be the same? Now, obviously, the Michigan ties, and they know him, but guess what? I got a feeling they probably have a beat on this Alabama kid.
Yep.
In different ways than some other teams, given their obvious ties to that program and where that program is, which is in Ozzie Newsome's heart. I think crazier things have happened, and somebody, I think it's going to be like, he doesn't really fit what McVay does, but like, I think it's going to be somebody who doesn't necessarily maybe have an immediate super pressing need who decides, no, I think I can do something with him. Like, we can improve the accuracy a little bit. We can coach him up. Like, he's got natural leadership skills. He's competed at the highest level. He's a really interesting prospect.
Remember, the NFL draft starts 3 weeks from yesterday, so it's going to be here before you know it. We like when we do that, 3 weeks from yesterday. Hey, coming up next, the 5 o'clock hour is going to be full of Terps talk. Len Elmore's joining us at 5:30, Terp legend. But coming up next, what does Jay Billis think of the Buzz Williams hire and the way that the prior coach will be respectful, because we have a professional coming on, Kevin Willard, how he left. We'll talk to Jay Billis next here on The Fan.